It's August and the football is still coming thick and fast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and this is Stuart Robson and you're listening to the Gab and Jewel show. We have a great show for you because Antonio Conte going a little bit loopy, deja vu all over again. And of course, we have our quick hits and the FA Cup final, which is where we're going to start, Robbo, because Arsenal win their 14th FA Cup final. They come from behind. They beat Chelsea 2-1. This was, some people suggest, tactically very astute from Mikel Arteta.
Yeah, not at the start of the game when they were trying to play out from the back when Chelsea were pressing high on them and they kept on giving the ball away. But what I did see was some great movement from their left side of the pitch. And
describe this to this because you've got a coach's eye. You did the game for us at ESPN. Explain a little bit what viewers at home who weren't seeing the whole pitch might have missed.
So they played with the 3-4-3 almost, and Maitland-Niles was the left wing back. Aubameyang was playing as the left-sided centre-forward, and Lacazette's playing as the main centre-forward. And whenever David Luiz or Xhaka had time on the ball, Maitland-Niles, the left wing back, would take Reece James, who was marking him, infield. Lacazette came short and brought Zouma in into a shorter, deeper position, and it left Aubameyang 1v1 against Azpilicueta in a quarter of the field. And David Luiz can pick out a pass, Xhaka could pick out a pass, and they kept on playing that ball over the top, and Aubameyang's movement and his pace to get in behind Azpilicueta caused problems. Then when Azpilicueta said, OK, I'm going to drop off that little bit deeper, so there's no space for you to run in, Aubameyang then went deeper, took Azpilicueta in with him, Lacazette pulled away to the other side of the field, and then Maitland-Niles kept on running Reece James in behind. So there was great movement from the Arsenal players on that left-hand side. And that doesn't just come from off-the-cuff football. That's come from work on the training field. This is how we're going to cause the opposition problems. This is how we're going to play when we get time on the ball in midfield. And this is how we're going to get our best player, Aubameyang, in 1v1 situations against a very good defender in Azpilicueta, but not quite as quick as Aubameyang.
Is this something, I mean, because you said it comes from the training ground. Is this something that would come from the training ground in preparing for this game, or is it a concept that he would work on more broadly given that, you know, it might be Saka or Martinelli out there and not Aubameyang?
No, I think it's exactly as all the time that Aubameyang's going to be in that position, they've been working at. That was the same as they did against Man City in the semi-final. The same players did exactly the same thing. Man City couldn't cope with it because Aubameyang kept on getting in. And Chelsea, even though Azpilicueta was trying to read it, the movement was so immaculate and well-timed and the passes were so good, it caused him a major problem. Eventually pulls his hamstring when he's chasing back several times. So you have to give credit to the manager, the coach and the players for getting the timing of the runs right and the players on the ball to pick the right pass as well.
Some big choices ahead for Arsenal. Every indication is that they, they're not going to have unlimited funds. In fact, they're going to have pretty limited funds. And they have a big call to make with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, his contract. He's a year from the end. He kind of evaded the question afterwards about whether he was sticking around. Arteta appeared a lot more confident, a lot more bullish, saying he wants to stay. It comes down to money. You want to avoid potentially an Ozil situation. You want to avoid chucking. He's already a really big earner. He's in his 30s. Where do you see this?
Well, most people say, just give him what he wants, you know, because he's your most important player. But we've seen Arsenal do that to Mesut Ozil, but they've done it for a lot of other players. Arsenal had a massive problem over the last few years of giving players too much money, and then when they're not performing or at the end of the contract, they can't sell them. You know, Nicholas Bentner was a great example. When Arsenal were paying people's wages for years and years when they went to other clubs, and you don't want the same with Aubameyang. Yes, they want to pay him well enough so that he thinks it's worth staying, but they don't want to give him too long a contract where he's past his best and he's still earning fortunes and then he's struggling to get in the team maybe in three years' time.
I'm with you on that. I think clubs should maybe look at doing this more. If you go to Aubameyang and say, look, Alba, this is our limit. If you're not happy with it, you know, and you can't find another club at a price that we're happy with, just come back and play next year towards your expiring contract. He'll be motivated to do well anyway because he's going to want the best possible deal for him. And maybe you can work something out later. I mean, what's not going to happen is Aubameyang, if he sticks around for, and winds down his contract, he's not going to sit there and sulk and pretend he has injuries because he knows when he gets out, he's going to be 32 or around there, and he's not going to have the same market. So I'd like to see more clubs do more of that, take that into account. But how much faith you have in Raul Sanjehi to make the correct choices? Because it is, I mean, it's a difficult job they have this summer.
Absolutely. I think it's imperative that he does make the right decision. I think you just on one performance or one half of the season, he's an outstanding player, but he's come to the fore more and more this season. Maybe when he's negotiating his contract, what you don't want to do is give him a massive amount of money and then he just tails away slightly, because that's what they did with Ozil, that's what they've done with other players.
All right, Chelsea also have some big calls ahead, and to help us sort through that, we've got James Ollie on, who was also at the game. Now, James, before we get into Kepa and Caballero, let me ask you, you spent some time one-on-one, socially distanced via Zoom, of course, with Christian Pulisic. Did he get into the issue of how he sort of won Frank Lampard's faith back and how he's improved or progressed over this season after, let's not forget, a very difficult campaign last year at Dortmund?
Yeah, I mean, it was an irony, really, of the fact that he joined up with the team earlier than he was actually asked to. He joined Chelsea on their pre-season tour of Japan just a week after the Gold Cup final that America lost. And I think what he obviously wanted to do was hit the ground running there for the new season. But really, he needed more time, I think, to have the break and then have the conditioning work that he did during the course of the season and during lockdown when he recovered from that adductor injury, to really get the physicality that he needed to be able to perform regularly in the Premier League. I know that in the first few weeks and months of the season, Frank Lampard was a bit concerned about whether he was robust enough to be able to play three games in a week and really was able to sort of ride the physical challenges that you tend to get as a winger week in, week out in the Premier League. So that's been a big part of it, I think. But, you know, he's always had that sort of relaxed mentality, been able to take everything in his strides. Not a lot phases him, and I think he's shown the aptitude to get down and do the hard work that's paid dividends really since the restart.
On the goalkeeping front, we saw Caballero instead of Kepa. How are they going to get out of this situation? Because they've locked Kepa up for a long, long time, and is this Lampard trying to motivate him, or what's going on?
Yeah, well, he dropped him earlier in the season, didn't he, for six games, and that was very obviously a clear indication to sort of say, look, you know, you need to buck your ideas up. Look, I mean, they've given a guy a seven-year contract, paid a world record fee for him. He's got five of those 7 years left. They're going to find it extremely difficult to move him out of the club. And I think although Lampard clearly has his reservations about him, he has prioritised other areas of the team to strengthen. He's obviously brought in two attacking players. He's trying to get a third in Kai Havertz. He's looking at the left-back position. He's also looking at centre-back. And I think, you know, those are all sort of concerns that are higher up the list for Frank. But, you know, it isn't much of a secret, I think, that if they could find a buyer to move him on, I think they would, and then go after, a Jan Oblak or an Andre Onana at Ajax, or even Dean Henderson at Manchester United to replace him. But, he's still young enough that he could come good. So, I think it wouldn't be the worst for everybody if he did have another season
but
there.
James, what is it that Frank Lampard doesn't like about Kepa? Is it his ability or is it his character?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. I mean, they've conceded an awful lot of goals from set pieces, Chelsea. And while he's made a point from open play about saying, you know, obviously you can't just blame the goalkeeper for the goals we're conceding, I think the fact that he doesn't command his box as well as you'd like to see. If you think about it, there was a goal at Newcastle when they lost 1-0 right in stoppage time at the end. And again, he doesn't make sort of howling errors. He just doesn't quite command himself, doesn't quite anticipate things. Positionally, perhaps, he's a little bit suspect. And we're talking about judging a goalkeeper at the very highest level. And also, there's probably one or two attitude issues. If you think about the issue that he had with Maurizio Sarri in the EFL Cup final last year when he refused to come off, I think that sort of indicated how headstrong he can be behind the scenes. So there's certainly things for him to work on in both aspects.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point he made about the transfer fee. And the reason it matters, obviously, is it's a boring accounting thing, but between his wages and his fee, if you sell him for substantially less than that, at this, you know, when he's 2 years into his career, you will make a big accounting loss, which then affects you in other areas. So it's a really, really difficult one, I think, for Chelsea.
At the moment, with Kepa, I can't see what his major attribute is. Is he a brilliant shot stopper? Is he dominant in the air? Well, James just said he isn't dominant in the air. And is he brilliant with the ball at his feet? He's okay at all three, but he's not got one outstanding attribute that makes him a world-class goalkeeper at the moment, and that's the problem for Frank Lampard.
I wonder if the attitude is, what if we brought in somebody to throw shade over him? So rather than a veteran like Caballero, where I think Kepa still feels, okay, this old bald weirdo is going to be gone soon.
Hey, less of the bald. Yeah.
But no, if you did, you know, roll the dice on somebody like Onana, who's not going to be very expensive, and say, you know what, you guys compete for the job. Let me I'm going to decide who's number one. I wonder if that would put pressure on Kepa to perform to his level, and then maybe you could loan the other one out or whatever, find a solution.
There must be a top-class goalkeeper in there somewhere. They just haven't got it out of him so far.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Antonio Conte making headlines again, not because Inter finished second in Serie A, 1 point off the top of Juve, although, to be fair, Juve probably did tank the last couple games after winning the title. It's actually their best finish since Mourinho, if you can believe that, or because Inter are in the running to win the Europa League, which I think is actually an attainable goal, potentially. No, he's in the headlines again. Because, as we say in Italy, he went to the bathroom outside the bowl again. He went on this rant after the game. He talked about how he didn't want people jumping on his bandwagon. He talked about how structurally Juventus were so far ahead. He talked about how all season long he and the players had to eat dung, except he didn't. It was translated as dung in English. That's another four-letter word that you can imagine that he used. He talked about how they weren't being protected by the club officials, presumably. He talked about how they've got lots of problems, and he wants to talk about it with the president, but he can't because the president's in China. I don't know what to say anymore. He had his rant before about the fixture list and the conspiracy, and he wasn't protected there by his club. We've seen this before. We saw it at Juventus, right? Remember when he had the line about they want me to eat in a 100-euro restaurant, but they only gave me 10 euros to spend? We saw it with the Italian national team, where throughout the Euros, even as they were doing well, everybody was rallying behind him, he continued and moaned about the training facilities and the federation and this and that. We saw it at Chelsea, where eventually he basically sacked himself and then, of course, managed to win compensation from the club afterwards. I did just your point. When you go out there and you go and you slam your employers like this after what is a good season, a season that generally overall there was definite forward progress, does this motivate? Is he creating? I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Is he creating some sort of siege mentality here that'll pay off? Given they're playing Getafe on Wednesday, this is their chance to go and win major silver, which they haven't won since Mourinho again.
I don't understand what he's trying to do because he's done, I think, a very good job with the team. They play more expansive football than they were playing at the beginning of the season. The front two are working really well. You can see all the tactics that he wants to bring into a club, as he did at Juventus when he was first there, as he did at Chelsea, as he did with the national team. You can see those same things coming out. So it's all done on the training field. And I think he's building a very good team. I think he's still got a problem with the wide centre-halves. But why you want to create this mentality where you're against the club and making everything sound as though the world's against you? Because it doesn't motivate motivate the players. If you're top of the table, it might motivate the players. But if you're trying to get to the top, you've got to make sure that everything's rosy in the garden. We're getting better. We're improving. Everything's right within the club. Next season, we've got every chance of winning the title. But he's saying all the opposite things, which I don't understand.
I mean, all right, first of all, it seems like a very foolish thing to do now ahead of their Europa League game. But I guess the idea is if I go and I act crazy, the club can't really sack me because I have another 2 years on my contract. You know, they owe him something like right around 40, 45 million over the next two seasons. He is one of the highest paid coaches in the world. So the club aren't going to have the courage to go and sack him. And if I say something about lack of ambition, lack of power, then the club gets scared. Maybe the turns the fans against the club owners. So I get more of what I want. And because I'm a winner, and when I have more resources, I can deliver victories. And I want to win so bad, and people can't match my ambition. It's an old, I mean, it's an old game, right, that managers talk about. But I'm not sure the Inter fans are going to buy this.
No, I think it's almost like self-preservation. I haven't won the title for you because all these other problems are there. I think he's been given quite a bit of money to strengthen the side. He's been able to bring lots of players. And they've got a massive squad now.
He did say, oh, it's nothing to do with transfers.
Yeah. So
what the hell is he talking about?
I don't understand him at all. Because if he sticks to what he's good at, which is building a side, coaching a side, getting the best out of his front players, making sure that the midfield is dominant and they play that high-pressing game when they do it very well. He's a very good coach and a very good manager. I love watching him play.
He's pushing all the buttons of the familiar tropes, right? So he talked about the conspiracy and about how, with a fixture list before, about how Inter weren't respected, so they didn't get the extra days dressed and whatever. The clear implication there is, by the way, Juventus did get them. It's an old trope. We've all seen it before, right?
But he didn't say that when he was at Juventus, did he?
No,
that they got they got all the favours.
And then the other thing, the little dig at the president, he's like, well, because, you know, it is this obsession we have in Italy, right? Against absentee owners, right? So anything goes bad at Roma, well, it's because Jim Pallotta lives in Boston and he's not there in Rome every day. And it's the same thing with Inter. This is something that they criticized Inter's owner for, even though his son, Stephen Jang, lives in Milan. So he's like, I want to talk to president, but he's in China. Well, first of all, apart from the obvious thing that, you know, I'm pretty sure Stephen Jang owns a mobile phone. You could probably speak to him. And actually, you speak English. Stephen speaks English. So you can actually talk to him directly. But leaving that aside, the reason I flagged this is because this is a familiar trope that we in Italy are obsessed with. The idea that the president has to be there. The owner has to be there. He has to be present all the time. Well, I'm sorry. How often do we see Liverpool's owners hang around the hang around games?
And it's the opposite mentality. In England, the coaches and managers don't want the chairman around. They're frightened when the chairman starts turning up at the training ground and starts turning up at the club.
Forget Sheikh Mansour. Is Khaldun Al Mubarak, is he camped out in Manchester on Deansgate? No, I don't think so. Roman Abramovich, he's halfway around the world. He's got no choice now. But, you know, I mean, it's this kind of mad situation that he's created. And I'll tell you what, this is going to hurt him. Inter may end up bending over for him because then it wouldn't be the first time. And he might get a little more power. Maybe he'll get somebody fired. Maybe he'll get... But you know what? It's not going to make a difference in the longer term because Inter are going to have real financial fair play issues like everybody else. So there's only so much that they can do. But what this is going to do is that unless Inter go and do something incredible next season, like win the Champions League or win the treble, he's hurting his prospects with future employers. No owner is going to want an employee who goes and calls him out and humiliates him in public.
If he doesn't win the title next season, he'll be out of a job.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Enough Conte. And by the way, people are already, and this is a fanciful conspiracy, linking Max Allegri with the Inter job and possibly Conte to take over at Juve for Sarri. Wouldn't that be fun? Conte and Cristiano together. Anyway, enough of that nonsense. How about some quick hits instead? This is where Jules normally says, let's go.
Can we just say it? Let's go.
Uli Hoeneß, who's the honorary president of Bayern, says he can't imagine the club bidding for Kai Havertz unless, and Robert, we need to read the fine point here, the club raises money through sales, like maybe Thiago Alcantara to Liverpool. Would it make sense for Bayern? Left on his contract?
I'm not sure it would make sense because they're two different sorts of players. Thiago is
I know, but it's just about money.
But I wouldn't buy Kai Havertz if I was Bayern because they've got lots of players who they've got Sané, they've got Koeman, they've got Gnabry who play in wide areas, but Sané can play behind the front player. They've got Müller still doing very well.
So Goretzka,
Goretzka. So I wouldn't be if I was Bayern, I wouldn't be looking to buy Kai Havertz.
King Uli is just messing with us.
Gab, the Court of Arbitration of Sport has given their written reasons explaining why the two-year ban against Man City was overturned. I haven't read all 93 pages, but I'm sure you have. What was in it?
Oh, a lot of legalese, a lot of legal stuff. It almost seems written so that whatever preconceived notion you have, you can find reinforcement for it. So if you think that Manchester City behaved horribly and obstructed justice, you can find many situations in that text where they basically say that, you know, they have a go at City and hence why they received that record fine for obstructing justice and whatever else, and they're bad guys. Equally, you can flip it around. If you're a Manchester City fan and who believes that, you know, this was a kangaroo court and that the IC wasn't independent, you can find plenty of information for that because they go and they pick apart many of the arguments that the investigatory chamber made. And they find that many of the conclusions...
In your opinion, did they make the right decision?
I haven't reviewed the evidence, so I'm not going to say...
So you haven't read all 93 pages?
I will say this. Somebody's got to explain to me how it's possible that that set of lawyers at the IC, which... Again, some people say, oh, they're not independent. It's not. They are independent. In fact, the guy who wrote the opinion, Charles Flint, who's a QC, he's on the board of the Dubai Financial Services Authority. So if he was some kangaroo, UEFA puppet, you'd have to wonder why the Emiratis keep him around in Dubai in such a prominent position. But anyway, I need to know, one of these people, one or the other, totally screwed this one up. Whether it was the investigatory chamber or CAS. I don't see how people can come to such massively conflicting opinions. So I think they need to review things. And look, the unfortunate thing about all this is what you call a messy ending, right? This is a verdict that nobody fully understands, that whatever bias they have going into it is reinforced. If you think City are total bad guys, you'll continue thinking that after reading this. If you think UEFA have some sort of vendetta and conspiracy against City, you'll continue thinking that. And this isn't good for football, in my humble opinion. Ciro Immobile scored his 36th goal of the season against Napoli to equal Gonzalo Higuain's Serie A record. Robbo, it's the third time he's been top scorer in Serie A, and he won the Golden Shoe as well, top goal scorer in Europe. In fact, he's the first guy not named Cristiano, Luis, or Lionel to win it since 2009. Impressed?
Always impressed by Ciro Immobile, and I think he's become a better player. Not
like
just
the
goal scorer.
Like a fine wine, improving
the
age.
I always saw that he was a runner and he could finish when he got through on goal, but was never that impressed with his link-up play. When he got in the Italian side, never really performed to the best of his ability. But this season, I think his link-up play has been better. His understanding with Caicedo when he's been playing, or Correa, he's pulling out into that sort of inside left position. His finishing is excellent. He's still got his pace. So if he can do it on three occasions, it means he's a top-class player, and that's what he is.
Ciro Immobile.
A special prosecutor in Switzerland has opened proceedings against FIFA president Gianni Infantino. Gab, is this a big deal?
Well, we have a conference call coming up in a couple hours with FIFA where they're going to give us their side of the story in more detail. But what all this comes about with the fact that in 2015 there was the big FIFA scandal, and the U.S. Department of Justice, together with the Swiss legal authorities, they said, all right, we're going to go and investigate FIFA top to bottom. There was also the risk that FIFA were going to be designated a criminal organization by the Department of Justice in the U.S., which would have meant that, you know, no more sponsorship, all these companies dealing with them would be in trouble, no more money, and effectively the end of FIFA. So Gianni Infantino, coming from UEFA, is new to FIFA. He takes over, and he says, this is his side of the story, yeah, I met with the Swiss Attorney General on three occasions because I wanted to offer full cooperation because we as FIFA were damaged by the actions of Blatter and the people who came before us. The problem is the Swiss Attorney General, when he met with him, he didn't keep minutes or notes of the meeting. And so some people have filed a complaint saying, ooh, sorry?
That was handy.
Well, people say, well, what did they talk about? I don't know. We'll find out more. My guess is the people who have who've asked for this investigation are disgruntled FIFA types linked to the old regime who say that, well, the minute Infantino came in, he did everything he could to get us all out. And there's even conspiracies going out there that this is the U.S. Department of Justice angry because the U.S. didn't get the 2022 World Cup, which, of course, went to Qatar, exacting revenge on FIFA and therefore on Infantino as well. Time will tell. Manchester City have had a £41 million bid accepted for Nathan Ake. Robbo, just what the doctor ordered, right? Another centre-back?
Yes, because I like Nathan Ake. I think he's a very good player, much underrated in previous seasons. Chelsea needs centre-halves. They had one, a very good one in Nathan Ake, but they allowed him to go out on loan.
Does it matter that he and Laporte are both left-footed?
Not really. I think he's when I've seen him play on occasions this season, he's played on the right-hand side of the two centre-halves for Bournemouth. I think he's got pace. He's better in the air than people would give him credit for because he's not 6 foot five. He reads the game really well. He's a good character. I saw him a lot as an under-17 playing for the Dutch side and coming through the Dutch national system. And I think he was a very good sign-in and it will improve Man City's back line, whether it be a three or a four. The Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia have pulled out of their purchase of Newcastle United. Gab, some thought it was going to be Manchester City 2. Instead, Newcastle fans are disgruntled and disappointed. What happened?
It says Manchester City 2.0 in the script, meaning like they'll have the same transformative value that the Abu Dhabi owners have had on Manchester City. Part of the problem here is we don't know why they pulled out. They gave reasons saying the changing economic climate, but it doesn't take a genius to figure out that part of the reason they pulled out is because it took the Premier League four months and counting to go and decide whether they're going to approve the purchase or not. Obviously, there's human rights concerns. There are concerns with piracy. There's all sorts of factors weighing in. I don't think a sovereign wealth fund should own a football club. Period. I think a sovereign wealth fund plays with the money that belongs to the people of that country, and they shouldn't be involved in this sort of thing. That said, obviously, Manchester City are owned by sovereign wealth fund, as is Paris Saint-Germain, so a precedent has already been set. What I don't think, though, is acceptable is for the Premier League to take 4 months without giving us an explanation of why it was taking so long. We know piracy was an issue. We know there's Qatari interest with being sport and whatever. But 4 months, Newcastle deserve an answer, especially because this affects them heading into next season because we're already in August. Now Mike Ashley's coming back, taking control of the club again. Not much time to work with. What I hope for is that some other owners will come forward and buy the club. And hopefully, you know, Newcastle will have an owner that they like and respect finally. All right, here we go. Some more quick hits. Zlatan Ibrahimovic reaches double figures as Milan win again. Robbo, since the restart, Milan have won more points than anybody in Serie A. Is it a no-brainer to give him another year, even though he's 38 and will turn 39 in October?
I would give him another year because I think he's brought the best out of other players.
At the money he's on now, that's the big question.
Yeah, that's the big question, obviously the money, but he's brought the best out of other players. Rebic now looks like a really dangerous player when he's running in behind. I think he's brought the best out of some of the midfield players. Kessie now knows that he can play little balls around the corner and it's going to be held up by Ibrahimovic. The manager is now going to be there next year as well and he's done a very good job. At the moment, Milan look a very good side and they want to continue that next year. And I don't think they've got the centre forward to do the role that Zlatan Ibrahimovic is playing at the moment. So keep him for another year. Barcelona are furious with Artur, who is on holiday in Brazil and won't be coming back for the Champions League. They're opening disciplinary proceedings against him. Since he's off to Juventus next month, I don't think he really cares. Is this a big deal, Gab?
I think it's a big deal because I think it tells us something about him. So when they agreed what is effectively a swap deal with Juventus for Miralem Pjanic, they said, okay, fine. Pjanic, you finish the season at Juventus. Artur, you finish the season with us. this guy goes off to Barcelona, goes off to Brazil, and now he says, like, now why do I want to come back just to go sit in the bench for a couple Champions League games? I think this is a big hazard sign, big warning sign for Juventus. Remember, he didn't want to move to Juventus in the first place. I've got serious...
Character-wise, you're saying this is a big warning sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you be a little bit professional here, Arthur? And how about you come back with your teammates who you've worked alongside and maybe try to win the Champions League, you know, which supposedly should be an ambition for professional footballers.
Yeah.
Put it this way. They're not getting off on the right foot. However slighted he might feel by Barcelona that they're sending him away, this is not a good way to start your relationship with Juve. Now, it's trivia time for you, Robbo. I don't expect you to get this. Juventus is...
Hang on. You're asking me a question you don't expect me to get the answer to.
Well, because you never know. It's a difficult question, and I know the answer because I looked it up. Juventus' win means that Danilo has now won the league in three different countries. And this is important because FIFA's official Twitter account, they sent out a tweet to Cristiano Ronaldo congratulating him for having won the league in England, in Spain, and in Italy, saying, oh, you're the first person to do it. And Danilo, from his own personal Twitter account, tweets back and has sort of like the little head-scratchy face because, of course, he's done it too.
Yep.
Not as many times as Cristiano, of course. But anyway, enough of these two. I just want to ask you, you know, there's two players who won the league in five different countries.
So you said it was going to be a hard question.
It is a hard question.
And you're absolutely right. I have no idea who those two players are.
I'll give you a hint.
Yeah, go on.
One of them, the more famous of the two, played in a World Cup for Brazil, was supposed to be sort of the fourth Galactico, played for Manchester City as well. Name starts with an R.
Robinho.
There you go.
Yes.
The other one used to team up yonks ago with Arjen Robben at PSV, and then moved to Chelsea in Jose Mourinho's first year.
Now, I'm trying to think who that would be.
He comes from the Balkans.
Ivan Nizovic.
No, there is no Ivan Nizovic. No, Ivan Nizovic is a tennis player. You're thinking of Mateja Kesman, remember?
Kesman and Robin?
Yes.
Kesman didn't play very often, though, did he?
He didn't play very well for Chelsea, but he still won a league title for Chelsea, and he's got league titles in five different countries.
Which countries?
Oh, my word.
I'm going to ask you the question. Which countries?
I'd have to look it up.
Yeah. Who was the right back that I'm thinking of for right Chelsea back? When I said Ivanovic?
You're thinking of Branislav Ivanovic.
I was close.
Yeah, but he's played for Chelsea for a million years. So, so he's in a totally different kettle of fish.
Ivanovic, but he was from the Baltic area. That was the clue you gave me.
Yes. Okay. But one's a right back. But anyway, you're being silly now, Robbo.
Eddie Newton has won the Turkish Cup with Trabzonspor. Gab, he was previously an assistant to Gus Hiddink and Roberto Di Matteo at Chelsea. He's been quoted as saying that he had to move to Turkey to get a shot at management, and the lack of black players or black managers up and down the English leagues speaks volumes. Is there a lesson there?
Well, I think part of the lesson is that if you go abroad, and I think this is regardless of race, as we've seen with people like Steve McLaren and Graham Potter, of course, who did very well at Swansea and now at Brighton.
Roy Hodgson years ago.
You know, you do get opportunities that maybe you're not going to have in England. Eddie Newton's case is, I think, particularly baffling because, you know, he was an assistant at West Brom when they won. Obviously, they won the Champions League with Chelsea. He had that experience as an assistant to Hiddink more recently when Hiddink took over from Jose Mourinho. You know, this is a football guy. He's been in and around football. I think it highlights the difficulty that sometimes players of color have in getting jobs. And in his case, you know, he's not a huge name. He wasn't a superstar footballer, although he did score a goal in an FA Cup final. But he is plugged into a very important football network, which is Chelsea's network. And still, nobody would give him a shot as number one.
And I'm sure he would have got a good reference from the likes of Di Matteo and Gus Hiddink, who have you know, both being successful managers.
Yeah, or Marina Granovskaya, or anybody mm-hmm. who's worked in and around Chelsea, right? I mean, there is a whole coaching tree there. So I think he does raise an interesting point. I believe he might be, I haven't checked it all, but I think he is the first English manager of color to have won major silverware. So, you know, shout out to Eddie. He's also a good guy who mm-hmm. I've met several times. But I think hopefully food for thought and maybe...
Will it give him a chance to come back to maybe the Premier League at some point or the Championship to go and manage a club?
He's been retained for another season now at Trabzonspor, as you would expect. But maybe it'll inspire other people to say, you know what, if I can't get a shot here in England, let me go abroad. Let me give it a shot there. All right, that's all we've got time for this week. Many, many thanks to Robbo. You were a wonderful stand-in for Julien Laurens. Jules, of course, will be back on Thursday. Did you enjoy it?
I always enjoy working with you, Gab.
Oh,
did you like that?
Very, very sweet.
I think I have to, you know, just butt you up at the right time.
But we're going to have some big stuff to talk about on Thursday because the Europa League will be back. And, of course, the Champions League just around the corner. So please join us.